Chapter 010.
So this girl's body grows each time she eats one of her stolen limbs.
Hanekawa indicated her grasp of the situation. The two of us were speaking immediately after sundown on April 1st. Kishot was still asleep. A vampire's day and night were reversed, and that applied to me as well. But feeling bad about dragging a model student like Hanekawa out of the house at too late of an hour, I'd tried and woken up early. There was a barrier placed around the abandoned cram school. That's what Oshino said. It not only hid my presence and kiss shots, it also made it difficult for regular people to find it without a guide, apparently. That's why I had Hanekawa come close by so I could go pick her up after the sun set. Hanekawa was on time and present at the spot we'd agreed upon. As always, she was wearing her uniform.
Heya!
Hanekawa raised her hand. She was being affable without a shred of awkwardness. It was just the right amount of distance and felt comfortable. Did you bring what I asked?
Yep. See?
Oh, thanks. This way then, I said, showing Hanekawa to the school. Private property, no trespassing. We passed through a fence bearing the sign. The ruined cram school's fence was befittingly ruined and filled with holes, and headed inside the building. Oshino was out negotiating, and Kishot was asleep. I had told Kishot that I'd be bringing Hanekawa, but she hadn't seemed particularly interested. Since our conversation might get pretty involved, maybe it was better to go to a different room, but I wanted Hanekawa to check out what Kishot looked like. That's why I decided to speak to Hanekawa in the room on the second floor that I usually spent my time in, with Kishot enjoying her beauty sleep right by us. Needless to say, the windows of the room were boarded up, and not even the light of the moon and stars filtered in. I was fine with my vampire eyes, but I'd arranged for a flashlight for Hanekawa, who had normal vision. Which is to say, she'd gotten it herself. After a little bit of chit-chat, I'd been deprived of newspapers and TV since spring break started, I told Hanekawa the story up to that morning, and she listened with interest, nodding. A model student. Maybe her curiosity about the unknown exceeded most people's. I told her everything I could. I didn't want to hide anything. Even if it was the 1st of April, I didn't want to lie. And it was when I had finished telling Hanekawa about Kishot's growth that she said,
So this girl's body grows each time she eats one of her stolen limbs. This girl might be an odd way to refer to a 500-year-old vampire, but is that the deal?
She seemed to have a decent grasp of the situation. Yes, I nodded. When she ate her right leg, from the knee down, she aged about 2 years, so... Yeah, after recovering the rest of her arms and legs, she'll probably be back to her old body, and look like a 27-year-old.
Huh.
Well, to put it Lord Frieza style, she has two more transformations left. One for her right leg and one for both of her arms.
That does clarify it for me,
Hanekawa said, glancing at Kishot snoring away atop the simple bed that Oshino had built. While she may have been a vampire, at first sight she was just a cute 12-year-old girl. She and I being together in an abandoned building had a real whiff of criminality about it. I just had to pray that Hanekawa wouldn't come to that conclusion.
So maybe it's my fault,
she said. Huh? What is?
You're running with a vampire.
Why would she think that? While I said I didn't want to hide anything and told her everything I could, I wasn't a total idiot. And I skipped over the stuff about her panties and the dirty books. But as it turned out, I was fretting for no reason.
Rumors have a funny way of coming true, right? Especially for ghost stories and stuff. They say rumoring has a way of having them find their way to you.
But it's not like I... Oh. Right. That day, I'd heard a rumor from Hanekawa. A rumor about vampires. Walk around by yourself at night, and... But that doesn't make sense. You told me about the rumor, so you'd have run into a vampire too.
I don't have to. It's probably just that your chances increase. Besides, I have, haven't I?
Huh?
You, Araragi.
Ah, right. I was a vampire too. So that was it. On my way to fight Dramaturgy, I'd happened to run into Hanekawa then and there, perhaps due to such a heightened probability. Every aberration has its reasons. the reason that I met a vampire.
There's another way of thinking about it. That the rumor actually precedes the aberration. That rumors cause them to be born. Like with oral traditions, you know?
I see. Are they rumored because they exist, or do they exist because they're rumored? It's like the chicken or the egg. Which of them tastes better?
Huh? I like eggs better.
I had meant it as a joke. A dud. You know the answers to everything, don't you?
Not everything. I just know what I know.
Is that so? I nodded before bringing the conversation back on track. Putting the talk about rumors aside, Hanekawa, yesterday you were going out of your way to look for a vampire, if anything. That's when I'd gone nuts. I didn't get mad this time, of course. Why were you? Existence is greater than humans, was it? You said you wanted to talk to one or something?
Well, it wasn't as if I was seriously looking for a vampire. I was stamping my feet for something that I know doesn't exist, more like. How do I say this? Maybe I've been going in circles and wanted a change in my life?
A change, eh? In my case, I'd gotten one, not only in my life, but also in my biology. It really was too much. But a model student, a class president among class presidents, Tsubasa Hanekawa, feeling like she was going in circles came as a bit of a surprise to me. Then again, maybe that was normal. She was human. As for me, I still felt lost even as a vampire. Actually, I felt a lot more lost.
It was just my way of trying to escape from reality.
I'd love to get back to reality myself.
I'm sure you'll be able to,
Hanekawa said. She had nothing to back up her words, but they made me glad.
Like I said, I want to help, but considering how outrageous the situation is, it doesn't feel like there's much I can do.
That's not true, I said, pointing at the backpack containing everything Hanekawa had brought. Those clothes and daily essentials are a great help.
Oh, it's nothing,
Hanekawa said bashfully.
Why don't you hurry up and get changed then? Your clothes are a mess.
Ugh.
Honestly, I was shocked when you showed up to meet me looking like that. Doesn't this Oshino person have clothes you could borrow?
All he owns are these Aloha shirts.
What's wrong with an Aloha shirt?
Maybe if they were Aloha shirts, I said, picking the first similar-sounding word I could think of. Not that I knew what it meant. In any case, I couldn't keep going around in the clothes I was wearing. It wouldn't be an issue if I could generate matter like Kiss Shot, but it went without saying that I couldn't. Yeah, you're right. Still, it didn't feel right changing clothes in front of a girl. I'd have to take my pants off, too. On second thought, maybe there's no rush. I just realized something. The previous night, I'd asked Hanekawa to buy me a change of clothes without giving it much thought, but my situation being what it was, didn't that mean not just shirts and trousers, but underwear? What? I guess I could at least change my shirt, I said, putting up a calm exterior as I reached for the backpack Hanekawa had brought. It was pretty full. Well, it did have more than clothes inside. But when I undid the zipper, the clothes were at the very top. Actually, underwear was at the very top.
Was medium okay?
Yeah.
I got you both boxers and briefs.
Why bother? No, actually, this was my fault. It really was. How dim had I been? And because of that, Hanekawa had suffered the worst embarrassment, buying both boxers and briefs.
Hmm? What's the matter? You're not gonna change?
I will, I said, grabbing the plain shirt folded under the underwear. It looked brand new, but it wasn't in a bag, and the tag had been taken off. Had Hanekawa washed and dried the clothes once after buying them? Why go so far? It was like I had the dirt on her or something. In any case, I took off my tattered shirt and began wriggling my arms through the sleeves of the plain shirt.
Wait a sec,
Hanekawa said. I stopped, but I was kinda topless.
I knew it. I thought so yesterday, too. But your body's a little different, Araragi.
Huh? But now that she mentioned it, was I a little more muscular? No, more than just a little. I had abs.
I knew it,
Hanakawa repeated.
Something seemed a little bit off when I saw you from behind yesterday. So it was your muscles. You also seemed thinner, more cut.
Identifying boys she barely knew from behind? Hanakawa, what are you really? That was the bigger question. Then... Kishot seemed to have suddenly woken up. If you were wondering, when she grew, her clothes and hair changed along with her body. As a 10-year-old, she'd worn a fluffy dress and had short, bobbed hair. But now that she was 12, she had long hair and her dress looked a little more grown up.
Of course thy body has changed. Ye've become a vampire. Our powers of healing work to keep our bodies in optimal condition.
Huh? Having supplied that explanation, Kishot dozed off. Which was she, awake or asleep? Still, it felt like she'd dropped a bombshell. Then again, maybe that's how it was. My fingernails hadn't grown since becoming a vampire, and I didn't have to bathe. I couldn't tell after only a week, but I doubted that my hair was growing either. So that was why. My new physique represented the ideal amount of muscle for my body and bone structure. And if you kept going, you arrived at the muscular heights of dramaturgy, or turned parts of your body into weapons as an application of that ability.
She went back to sleep.
Yeah. Rising and shining doesn't seem to be her thing.
And she's 500 years old?
According to the lady herself.
She didn't seem to notice me at all.
Then Hanakawa said,
"Excuse me,"
and touched my upper body. She began to slowly stroke my abs and chest. Stroke, stroke. Uh-oh. I was getting mildly aroused. Was she being naughty or what?
You still feel the same as a human, but with subtly more muscle elasticity.
A simple case of intellectual curiosity. Right, of course. You say the same as a human, but have you touched other men's bodies?
Huh? No, never!
Hanakawa quickly pulled her hand away from my body, shy all of a sudden.
You're right. I was speaking from imagination, not experience. I shouldn't do that. Hurry and put on that shirt!
Okay. I put on the shirt. She said it was a medium, but it felt a little on the large side. I figured it wouldn't be a problem, though. I liked that it was a plain shirt, too.
So it fits?
Yeah. Thanks. Or rather, sorry about that. I'll pay you back as soon as this is all over.
Forget about it. I've been saving my New Year's gift money ever since I was little.
Don't use that kind of money on me! Cash I could reimburse, but not memories. What an unfathomable woman. Carelessly requesting something of her could have dire consequences.
There are two hoodies under that. Oh, were jeans okay for pants?
Yeah. Ease of movement is what matters most.
I eyeballed the waist and inseam sizes, but just tell me if they're too tight or too short. I'll go buy another pair.
Note to self. Put up with it, even if they're a little tight or short. While I wasn't changing into them at that moment, I decided to at least check the jeans and began rummaging around the bottom of the backpack. Then, I found a bag. It was a paper bag from that major bookstore. It felt like 10 or so books were inside. Huh? When I pulled it out, for no reason really, Hanakawa told me,
"Oh, those are presents. You bought an Aikido book yesterday, right? The one that you left by the school gates. And judging by your story, you got in order to fight that big person, right?"
Well, yeah. So that was her appraisal of dramaturgy. Big person. She had some guts, didn't she? In the end, the baseball guide I bought along with it came in handier.
Ah, the one you were reading when we met, right?
What are you getting at? Hanakawa nodded.
Well, you were right to try and prepare in the face of a tough battle, but I also thought that you were going about it in the wrong way.
I don't disagree with you there. You mean cramming will only help so much. She had seen me the day before, my crude style of fighting, how much I relied on luck, how I just took things as they came. No one would spend years practicing if they could master it by flipping through a book.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant,
Hanekawa said.
Aikido and baseball are both things that humans do, right?
Huh? Well, I guess an arm lock was useless against dramaturgy. But if his regen wasn't very good, breaking his arm might have had some effect.
You sound so rough. But that's not it either. This isn't about who's on the receiving end, but on the giving end. I'm talking about your side, Araragi.
Huh?
Aikido is a human fighting style, and baseball is a human sport. Your strength is clearly greater than a human's right now, Araragi. So Aikido or baseball or anything of the sort seems like it would only end up limiting your strength.
Oh. She was right. In fact, a baseball was too light for me. The shot put was okay. It wasn't until I grabbed that roller that it felt right. All of my stats had been lifted at the same time, so it was hard for me to be aware of it. But as I was, human techniques might actually just hold me back.
So I think what you should be reading now are these,
Hanekawa said, opening the paper bag I'd taken from the backpack and showing me what was inside. It was manga. A straightforward, superpowered school action series at that. A boy in a school uniform was on the cover.
I looked for one with a vampire high schooler as the protagonist, but I couldn't find one, so I went ahead and picked up one where the main character is a boy who uses superpowers.
Went ahead and picked...
Just like this,
she said, opening up to a page where a boy, probably the protagonist, was running up a wall.
You can probably now move ignoring the laws of physics.
Uh-huh. I was taken aback for a moment. But hold on. It might not be such a bad idea. Actually, it was a pretty good one. I was still clinging to the common sense I'd acquired as a human, according to dramaturgy. There was weight behind his words, since he was a former human like me. And just like he said, I dug myself a hole during our battle because that sort of common sense had too much of a hold on me. I was able to do a backflip, for crying out loud. Surely I could run up a wall. Oh, I see.
I did read through it. It's pretty fun.
I hadn't heard of the manga before, but it did look fun.
There's a fantasy novel that I'd personally recommend, but I thought manga might be the most immediately effective solution considering your goals. Learning visually will help you remember better, too.
That's definitely true.
Well, try using those as your yardstick. After that, pick out what you think you'd like.
Thank you. And I had yet to tell Hanekawa that I needed to face Episode and Guillotine Cutter after this. Talk about being prepared. Gosh, she was no ordinary girl.
Here, a bookstore gift card for then.
That's beyond prepared!
Would you have preferred cash?
I can't believe this! What was I? In any case, I gratefully received what Hanekawa was considerate enough to offer me, including the gift card. I was seriously broke, from buying too many books. You're a lifesaver, Hanekawa. I promise I'll make it up to you someday.
This is really all I can do, anyway.
All you can do? It's more than enough. Honestly, it was heartening. Which, I supposed, also meant that I had been feeling disheartened. I couldn't call Oshino an ally. As for Kisshot, this was really her business. Plus, she was a vampire. I hadn't expected to feel so relieved from talking to someone. No, it wasn't because I'd talked to just anyone, but to a friend. Thank you. I mean it.
Oh, stop it. That's what friends are for, right? Don't hesitate to let me know if there's anything else you want me to do, Araragi. This is about everything I can do at the moment, though.
Yeah. I'll be counting on you.
Oh, right. Do you want me to clean this classroom?
It looks like a total mess, she added. Well, the building was abandoned. No sooner than she'd spoken, Hanekawa began moving. But wait, I couldn't actually let her do this. It's fine. It was like this when we found it.
That's no reason to leave it a mess. We ought to start where we can and... Hey, what's this?
Hanekawa said, picking something up from the corner of the room. For a moment, I didn't have any idea what it was either. But only for a moment. It was yet another bag from that major bookstore. But neither the one Hanekawa had brought, nor the one with the Aikido, baseball, and classical music books that I'd purchased the night before. But I remembered seeing it. And then I realized. Yes. It was the bag with the two dirty books in it. The one I thought I'd thrown away on the first day of spring break. It was Kishot, sounding half asleep behind us.
I had forgotten to tell thee. That bag thou hadst so preciously clung on to was on the side of the road, so I brought it here with me for thee.
You! Damn it! Back asleep! Oh no. Hanakawa was staring at the books inside. A high school girl was staring at dirty books featuring high school girls.
When you encountered that vampire, you were on the way back from the bookstore, right? On March 25th? The night of the day we first ran into each other?
Wow. I couldn't believe how perceptive she was. But couldn't she be misunderstanding the situation in the worst possible way here? Hanekawa looked up and turned to me, grinning from ear to ear. The flashlight was illuminating her from directly below, and it felt like I was facing an aberration. She took one of the books from the bag and opened it to a random page. Of all things, it contained a stunningly idiotic special feature on bespectacled class presidents. She asked me in the kindest of purrs.
So, what's this?
Chapter 011. Episode. A man with sanpaku eyes and a white traditional school uniform who carried on his shoulder, with one hand, a gigantic cross triple the size and the cube of the weight of his body. Apparently, he was a vampire hunter. A man who slew vampires in order to collect bounties. A hitman, if you will. And to add to that, he was supposedly a half-vampire. Hunter of, and half. Though he could even look juvenile. Contrary to his appearance, he was an expert hunter of vampires who'd taken Kishot's left leg from her. That was Episode. He sure is late. 3 days later, April 4th. 4 being homophones with death and an unlucky number in Japan. The date felt vaguely ominous to me, but I wasn't complaining about such trifles. I tried to check my wristwatch, only to realize that I'd forgotten to wear it. I thought I'd check my cell phone instead, but I had forgotten it too. No good. I wasn't calm after all. It was fine, though. Like the vagabond he was, Meimei Oshino, the man I'd most want to contact in a tight spot, didn't own a cell phone. To hear him say it, though, it was just that he hadn't a clue when it came to gadgets. True, nothing seemed more far removed from yokai and aberrations and such as a cell phone. Either way, it was the night of April 4th. I had once again come to the athletic field of Naowetsu Private High School at night. For round two, of course. To fight Episode, the second of the three vampire hunters. I had been giving it a lot of thought over the past 3 days, but my ultimate decision was to show up empty-handed, like the time I battled Dramaturgy. I'd accepted Hanekawa's view on the matter.
I think it would be better if you didn't have any weapons. I mean, a normal weapon couldn't handle your so-called vampiric strength. And even if we found one that could, what if the police pulled you over for a stop and frisk?
She was all too right, but bringing it up at this stage? Hey, if that's the deal, I think the authorities need to be stopping and frisking those three vampire hunters more than me.
But these people are professionals, aren't they? They must have the know-how to avoid that sort of thing.
Come to think of it, Dramaturgy could even turn his body into mist. Plain human restrictions wouldn't hinder them. And so, that's why I was barehanded. And though it felt like I hadn't learned my lesson from last time when I tried and failed to take on Dramaturgy's dual-wielded wavy greatswords with my two empty hands, Hanekawa, her usual impressive self, had shared with me a number of observations she'd made simply by watching the battle from the shadows of the school building. They were mostly red marks. But if I could put my experience to use this time... As usual, Kishot's advice wasn't very helpful. A flashback scene of how I sought it follows. A vampire hunter and a half-vampire. Well, even I know that much vampire terminology. But couldn't you give me some more details, Kisshot? Her body now a 12-year-old's. Kisshot had this to say in reply.
I forgot.
She forgot. She was puffing her chest out as haughtily as ever. Having gone from 10 to 12, which meant the onset of puberty, her chest was budding, but it certainly wasn't a reply to be dispensing haughtily.
My powers of recall have weakened. Oh, had I already mentioned that?
I do appreciate the humor, but...
Wait one moment.
With that, Kisshot held the fingers of her right hand in a straight line by her head, and, without skipping a beat, dug the four nails into her temple. The blonde girl's tiny right hand vanished into her head down to the wrist. Blood began to spurt out, evaporating and disappearing each time. Hey!
One moment. I'll remember in no time.
Kisshot proceeded to rummage around inside her own head, which is to say she was mushing around her brain. Not only blood, but a liquid like spinal fluid was also shooting out of the wound. Ugh. No, 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 no! Forget an anime adaptation twice over! What's more, maybe her fingers were getting caught up in her ocular muscles, because her right eye made idiosyncratic movements like it was under demonic possession. Literally, searching through her memories. I'd heard of some strange mnemonic devices before, but this took the cake.
Ah.
Kisshot finally removed her reddened hand. She wore a refreshed smile.
I remember.
What? I prompted as I watched the blood that stained her golden hair red evaporate before my eyes. What did you remember?
As thou could surely tell from his attempts to win thee over, Dramaturgy does not hunt vampires out of any sort of hatred. But Episode is different. The fellow detests vampires.
He detests them? Why? He's half vampire, right? Well, he's a vampire hunter, so I didn't think he'd be on our side or anything.
No. Though it is difficult to say decisively with such a small sample size, most half-vampires come to hate vampires.
Why?
Well, to put it simply, 'tis because half-vampires are not accepted into the world of vampires, nor is that reason enough for them to be accepted into the human world. And so, they hate their vampire blood.
Wouldn't that make them hate humans just as much, though?
They do not think well of them, but what use is it hating those weaker than you?
Kisshot replied bluntly.
They may be but half-vampire, but their strength is leagues beyond the average humans. Episode in particular seems to have a strong hatred of vampires. I've no knowledge of his upbringing, but I imagine I would prefer to stay ignorant of it. So do not assume that he will give up easily. While work may have driven Dramaturgy, emotions move Episode.
Huh. So he was less of a pro than Dramaturgy.
While a half-vampire's immortality is not as strong as a vampire's, their breed is notable for their near lack of vampiric weaknesses. They are even capable of walking in daylight, and of casting shadows.
Huh? They cast shadows?
In other words, in exchange for half of their strengths, they eliminate nearly all of their weaknesses.
Ah. Okay. I shouldn't be too quick to draw conclusions, but him not having any weaknesses was kind of rough. So how can I beat him?
Huh? Well, by being thy usual self?
Thank you, Kisshot, for your excessive faith in me. And thus, the night of the battle had come. For the past 3 days, I had been absorbed in manga. I couldn't blame any onlooker for thinking that I was goofing off, or at least slacking off, but I'd covered nearly every super-powered school action series in serialization. Oddly enough, reading manga out of necessity meant taking it slow, no matter how much of a page-turner it was. But every day, including that day, Hanekawa came to the abandoned cram school right after the sun set to bring me more manga, so it wasn't as if I could stop. I'd even received a gift card, but I was told that it'd be best if I kept from going outside too much. It was Oshino who told me that. On the night of April 1st, right after Hanekawa left to go home, Oshino returned. And that's when he told me. I regretted just missing my chance to introduce Hanekawa to him. But then, he could have been waiting for her to leave, so I didn't press the point.
I know I'm supposed to stay neutral here, but that's a pretty good idea. Little Missy Class President really has her wits about her.
Oshino said.
But I think I might have to oppose the idea of you walking around outside when you don't even have a match. They might seize the chance to go after you.
Wait, but couldn't you negotiate that?
One of the tricks to negotiating is not to give away any opportunities for free. I don't think they'll try to lay their hands on you, but you wouldn't want them tailing you.
Even if they do, they can't find this place, right? While it didn't affect Kishot and me, who lived within it, and barring Oshino, who'd put up the barrier in the first place, he'd said it was that effective.
Of course I'm confident about the barrier, but I want to squelch any risks.
Risks?
Missy Class President is coming by again tomorrow, no? If you want a wider variety of titles to read, try asking her then. Oh, and while I think the barrier will cause her to get lost even on her second and third trips here, that'll just have to be part of the package.
But...
And of course I can't help you. So if she says no, you'll have to ask a different friend.
I didn't have other friends. I had no choice but to rely on Hanekawa.
Oh, and let me borrow them when you're done.
With that obnoxious parting remark, Oshino left. He'd gone back out only minutes after coming home. When did the guy sleep, anyway? I saw him lying around often enough, but I couldn't remember him ever sleeping. Was he hustling that much with his negotiations? In that case, I supposed I could at least let him borrow some manga. For her part, Hanekawa continued to be really cool. When I asked her during her visit to the abandoned cram school the next day, the 2nd of April, she agreed to be my shopper right away. For 3 days straight, until today, the 4th of April, she'd gone and bought for me her recommended manga and my requested manga. She was way too cool.
Do your best, all right?
Even today, as I left the school for the first time in 3 days, she sent me off with those encouraging words. Simple words that touched me. Jeez, if I do get turned back into a human, how much thinking am I going to be doing? At that moment, I was missing the mark completely. Even at that point, the strength of the woman called Tsubasa Hanekawa, but also her precariousness, hadn't registered with me. I wonder if she's gotten home by now. Just as I muttered those painfully idyllic words, considering later developments, episode finally appeared. Appeared on the athletic field of Nauetsu Private High School. Appeared like a cloud of mist. A vampire hunter. A half-vampire. No weaknesses as a vampire. Yet, though halved, endowed with the powers of a vampire. A somewhat frail-looking man, with sanpaku eyes. White traditional school uniform. He could look juvenile, but the gigantic cross he slung over his shoulder with one hand worked to dash that impression. Just like the other day, he wore a faint smile, and glared sharply at me. Episode. The man who had stolen Kishot's left leg.
Gotta love it,
he started in. He offered no apology for being late.
Cracks me up, it really does. Old drama turkey finding himself on the wrong end of a hunt going after a brat like you. How careless could he have been? I hate all vampires, even the ones that are vampire hunters. But I'd at least thought highly of old drama turkey.
No shortage of hostility or malice. On top of it, he was making light of me. Well, if he hated both vampires and humans, that would make me, a former human and a fresh vampire, his most hated type of all.
So, what am I supposed to do, brat?
Supposed to do?
We're about to have a match, yeah? What sort of match will it be? It doesn't have to be violent. I feel like I could beat the likes of you at anything.
Sorry, I said. If you take away the fact that I'm Kishot's thrall, I'm just a plain human. Even a washout. The only way I could face you is as a vampire against a vampire hunter. The only other thing I could see myself beating you in is rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah? Gotta love that.
I seriously made him laugh, Episode said.
You're being awfully timid, aren't you? I've hunted my fair share of formerly human vampires. but they were all more cocky, you know? Like they'd become omnipotent. They were acting like they were gonna rule the world when all they gained were the powers of a mosquito. Gotta love it.
Maybe he was making a point of speaking the language of the land, but it felt really weird for a man who carried such a menacing cross to be saying "Gotta love it" over and over. Whatever point he thought he was making.
Of course, I brought them all back down to reality. There doesn't seem to be any need to do that with you, though. Saves me some work. So you get a special treat.
Episode said, closing one eye. Maybe he was winking.
I'll kill you without doing any permanent damage.
You used that line before.
It's my trademark line. Gotta love it, huh? If you're gonna imitate me, don't just copy it. Make it your own.
Saying this, he held out his hand, the one he wasn't using to support the cross. A handshake? Was this a pre-match handshake? Maybe he was surprisingly polite in that way. Wondering, I reached to shake his hand, but just as I did, Episode quickly moved his into the shape of a pair of scissors.
There, I win! You can't even beat me in rock, paper, scissors! As a vampire hunter fighting you as a vampire, I'd win too.
People like Oshino make me uncomfortable, I said. But people like you, I hate.
Hey, if you're saying that about me, you can't duke it out with Guillotine Cutter. Even I get a little creeped out by how nasty he is. But lucky for you, I'll be beating you here tonight, so you won't have to face him.
You're pretty confident.
Sure,
he said.
But I agree with you. That bastard Meimei Oshino is a handful. Gotta love this little farce he set up. Whether it's formerly human vampires or true blue ones, I've never had to fight this fair and square.
You know the conditions.
Yeah. If I win, you tell me where Heart Underblade is. And if by some freak chance you win, I'll give you her left leg back. Have I got it down?
Yep, that's it.
By the way, do you actually know what those conditions mean?
When I nodded, Episode continued with a grin.
They rule out killing each other. I can't kill you if I want you to tell me where Heart Underblade is. And if you want that woman's left leg back, you won't be killing me either. It may seem like a rough and tumble way to settle things, but it draws the line at killing. How pacifist.
A match. That's how Oshino had put it. Not a fight to the death, but a match.
And you're right. Old Dramaturgy, Guillotine Cutter, and I are all professionals. This is the only way you can win. We've managed to choose the single one.
Was that true? Was that what he meant by balance? Did that sleazy man think through all that in putting together these matches? As a neutral negotiator, to the tune of 2 million yen.
Of course, if I knew where Kishada Seralaorian Heart Underblade was, I'd kill you and her both, once again without doing any permanent damage.
Episode said, laughing.
I'm warning you, don't think I'll go easy. I hate picking on the weak. But I love picking on the evil.
Am I evil?
Of course you are! You're a monster.
Aren't you one too? But I couldn't say so. He was only half that.
Huh? Aren't I what? If there's something you want to say, spit it out!
No, it's nothing. There's nothing I want to say. Let's get started.
Yeah. Let's end this.
And with that, the prologue came to an end. In contrast to the time I faced Dramaturgy, I was the one to make the first move. Above all, I was determined to act first. I lacked actual battle experience. As soon as I was on the defensive, I'd be thrown off balance and lose myself. I had to try to attack at least. Exactly as I had learned in a manga, I stepped forward and unleashed a punch with all my body weight behind it. But all it met was air. Or more precisely, all it met was mist. Episode had turned his body to mist in the blink of an eye. And you can't punch mist, not to any effect. I staggered ahead, pulled forward by my arm that now traveled with an awkward amount of momentum. Oops, he's going to counterattack, I thought, and readied myself. But he was unable to harm me either, transformed into mist as he was.
Sorry, but you easily outclass me in terms of raw ability, being a thrall of the Aberration Slayer. I don't intend to fight a close-range battle.
Episode, still a cloud of mist, cross and all, said, before returning to his original body a significant distance away from me. The cross returned, too. Since it had turned into mist with him, was it a part of his body, just like with Dramaturgy? No, something was different. It seemed to work more like clothes, both Dramaturgies and kiss shots. What are you thinking of doing from all the way over there?
This,
Episode said, hurling that giant cross in my direction. Carelessly, without getting into anything remotely like a pitching form, unlike me against Dramaturgy, he hurled it with sheer force. It caught me completely by surprise. I never imagined he'd throw that giant cross 3 times his own size. Sure, I did almost throw the roller at Dramaturgy, but what kind of vampire hunter tossed his cross? So little faith. I'd figured the cross was a weapon, but I thought he was going to use it like a broadaxe. I barely got out of its way. And when I did, I felt like kicking myself. Stupid me. Hadn't I learned anything at all? There was no need for me to dodge attacks. Given my powers of recovery as Kishot's thrall, I could heal myself in moments. And my plan was to use that fact to my advantage. But thanks again to the common sense I'd acquired as a human, I could not but jump out of the way of what my vampire eyes were able to see. Yet this time, it worked in my favor. The cross I thought I'd dodged had barely grazed my right shoulder. And a moment later, my shoulder began to burn. It was engulfed in flames. It evaporated. Almost like the time I'd exposed myself to the sun. Cross! I mean, it was totally a vampire's weak point. Even I knew that much. Episode had been carrying it all too naturally, and its presence had been so overwhelming that I'd been paradoxically blind to the fact. Or rather, because its sight had caused me no problems whatsoever, I disregarded that fact. Now I understood. Episode being a half-vampire and not having a vampire's weaknesses also meant he was fine around crosses. Crosses. A giant cross. Since seeing it appear to do nothing, it must have been a weapon whose effect only manifested itself upon direct contact. Its tremendous effect. My skin had evaporated, and it wasn't regenerating. No, it wasn't not regenerating. Just regenerating at an abnormally slow speed. Even my powers of recovery as Kishot's thrall couldn't keep up. In that case, it was even worse than the sun. Because it involved direct contact, the effect was amplified. A mere graze had me like this. What would happen if it hit me for real? Huh? While I was worrying about my wound, Episode had turned his body to mist once more, and was moving while in that form. I was convinced that he'd take the opportunity to press his attack, but exactly as he'd declared earlier, Episode wasn't going to close in on me. Where he did go was to the gigantic cross he'd just hurled. Having grazed the tip of my shoulder and flown another 30 feet or so, the weapon had stabbed half its length into the athletic field. Episode restored his body near it, then pulled out the buried cross.
That reminds me. When you faced old Dramaturgy, you threw things at him from a distance too. A good idea. If I ever had to go at it with a character like him, I'd probably do the same. Like this!
Episode said, before throwing the cross again. In my direction. This time, I dodged it cleanly. But it didn't mean I could relax. That's because, at that moment, I perfectly understood Episode's tactic at long last. My previous fight with Dramaturgy, the red marks from Hanekawa, who'd been watching, came down to 2 points.
What if your opponent tried doing the same thing to you?
That was number one.
If that big person with his brawn had caught the shot put, or the roller you'd sent his way and thrown it back at you, what were you gonna do?
As for number two,
the scariest thing with long-distance attacks is running out of ammo. You're throwing your weapons. So even with a full cage of balls, throwing them thoughtlessly isn't ideal.
What Episode was now doing to me, a vampire, masterfully avoided both of those red marks. For one thing, he was throwing that cross. No matter what, I wouldn't be able to throw the cross back at him. How was I supposed to hurl something that I couldn't even touch? The moment I touched it, that body part would evaporate. Furthermore, there was no risk of him running out of ammo. He could turn to mist, then go get the cross he'd thrown. Half vampire. He could touch crosses fine, and he could turn his body into mist. Making the most of his own strengths, he was also exploiting the weaknesses.
Gotta love it!
As if to confirm my hypothesis, once again Episode reconstructed his body by the cross sticking out of the ground and yanked it out.
I'll just whittle you down. Please don't mess up dodging it and take a direct hit to the heart. I can't have you actually dying on me!
He threw the cross mid-sentence as though to take me by surprise. I could dodge it, probably because, as he said, I outclassed him in raw ability. While a half-vampire's arms could generate a fair amount of velocity, they were still no match for a full vampire's vision and burst of speed. But true, at this rate, he could whittle me down. I had no hand to play. The superpowered school battles I'd read over the past 3 days didn't cover this development. I turned around. Unsurprisingly, the cross was sticking out of the ground. It almost looked like a gravestone. A giant cross sticking out of the athletic field. Then, his body manifested next to it.
You could surrender, too. Not that I wouldn't just slaughter you tomorrow instead. I don't care if you think I'm being repetitive or uncreative. I'll kill you using the exact same method. There isn't a thing a vampire can do about its weakness to crosses, after all.
He was a professional. While he may have been moved by emotions, he was still a pro. I looked at the shoulder wound I'd suffered at the outset. It still wasn't done healing, and the pain coming from it was still extreme. No hand to play. From the get-go, outside of a quick face-off, there was no way, given my total lack of experience, I was going to defeat a seasoned opponent. If he was going to take his time like this, there was nothing I could do. I was done for then. I could run to the PE storage shed, but why throw shot puts and rollers against an opponent whose body was missed? How was I to strike back against an opponent I couldn't damage with physical strikes? Just as I was coming to an oddly calm judgment that fear had fixed my body in place and that I probably wouldn't be able to dodge Episode's next attack, I heard a loud voice.
Aranagi!
No auditory hallucination could be that loud. And upon looking in the voice's direction, who did I find but... Or actually, I already knew who it was after all the conversations we'd had. It was Tsubasa Hanekawa. She'd appeared from out of the school building's shadows. Had she been hiding there just like the other day? Ridiculous. Hanekawa had gone home.
You can't give up yet! The opponent turns into mist!
Putting both of her hands to her mouth like a megaphone, Hanekawa continued to yell, completely ignoring my confusion.
He turns into mist, so that means...
Gotta love it!
He said. Episode didn't even seem to hesitate as he threw the giant cross he'd readied towards me. In Hanekawa's direction. Why do such a thing, the bastard? Hanekawa! I'd heard that Hanekawa's reflexes were by no means poor. She was a model student. Even her PE scores were appropriately off the charts. But of course, within the bounds of human common sense. Needless to say, for a vampire, she was no match even for a half-vampire. She wasn't blessed with the necessary vision or burst of speed to dodge the cross, and barely managed to get half a step out of its way. One corner of the cross gouged her flank. Naturally, since she wasn't a vampire, she neither burst into flames nor evaporated from coming in contact with the cross, but the giant crucifix was still a hefty mass of silver. What was a soft human flank to it? I ran over to Hanekawa using every ounce of strength I had in my legs. Felt like I was able to reach her in a split second. And in fact, I was able to catch her before she fell backward to the ground. But it was still all too late. Hanekawa's uniform was torn, Her skin was torn. Her muscles were torn. Her ribs were torn. Her organs were torn. Crimson blood gushed out from her and wouldn't stop. The wound was simply too big to stop the bleeding. Naturally, neither the pieces of flesh that had scattered from her body nor the flowing blood evaporated. It just seeped into the field, taking its time staining it red. Red. Hanekawa! 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 She laughed, bashfully. In this situation, as if she were embarrassed that I'd seen her organs. A shy smile.
Be quiet, Araraki. Your phone.
Hanekawa's complexion was growing worse and worse. But she didn't let her smile fade. She only continued to smile as she added.
Forgot your phone, didn't you? I came to give it to you.
Who cares about a phone? I yelled. But Hanekawa had to know that too. This bit about my phone was just an excuse for her. Plain worried, she must have come here instead of going home. And unable to stand by and watch any longer, she'd showed herself. She had to have known how dangerous that was.
Get it together. You're dealing with mist.
Though the ground grew redder and redder, Hanekawa's tone remained firm.
Mist. Which means water.
Hanekawa?
Araki?
Her voice still firm. She slowly began to shut her eyes.
What's your long jump record, roughly?
Sink. As if on cue, Hanekawa's body suddenly grew heavy. But she'd lost so much blood. Did human beings grow so heavy just from losing consciousness? In that case, what happened when they lost their lives?
Ha! Gotta love it! How long are you gonna keep me waiting?
When I saw him, Episode had already picked up the giant cross that had pierced Hanekawa, and had it readied in my direction.
If you don't move, that girl's body's only going to take more damage.
You.
Let me just say that you're the one who broke our promise, Thrall of the Aberration Slayer. This was supposed to be one-on-one. But I'll agree to call it even, since I laid my hands on a third party.
Hanekawa is a normal human. She wouldn't have counted. What could she have done? How could you? To a normal human! Or are humans your enemies as well? More than targets of hatred, but enemies? Not just vampires, but humans too. Still, why lay his hands on Hanekawa? Even the advice she'd given me, in a firm tone to the very end before she faded into unconsciousness, sadly passed over my... Mist? Water? Long jump? Oh, never mind. I understood. Yes, my locational advantage. I take it back. Hanekawa did count. Now I could beat him! I screamed with all my might, and charged. Having gently laid her body on the ground, I was taking Hanekawa's suggestion and acting on it immediately without so much as revising it. I drew a straight line from Episode's current location to that place, and came to a halt atop it. It was at the exact same time that Episode hurled the giant cross in my direction. I'd made it. Or no, not yet. The conditions wouldn't be met unless I dodged the cross. Instead of leaping out its way, I ducked. And passing above my head, the cross took a tuft of my hair with it. Continuing along its path, the cross pierced that place.
What, really? You get mad, but you're just going to run away? Tcha! Lame to the bitter end! Gotta love you!
Wasting no time, Episode turned his body to mist and chased after the cross. But I wasn't idly staying where I was. Still crouched, I used my knees like a spring and leapt up into the air. The impact from this didn't simply cause the field to sink in. It cracked. I'd have to flatten it back out later again. But now wasn't the time to be worrying about that. It was my first time attempting to maintain my posture in midair, and it was fairly hard. A vampire's powerful leap. I had probably jumped about 60 feet up, and the same distance forward. 60 feet. Exactly what I had aimed for. That place, like the PE storage shed, I couldn't not know about it, having attended the school and taken PE classes for 2 years. Namely, the sand pit at the edge of the field. I landed there, with a long jump. Though without a running start. Not that I needed one. Either way, it was undeniably a long jump. I landed right by the cross buried deep in the sand, once again just as Episode reached the pit.
Ha! Gotta love it! That's some real power! But you think such a sloppy kick would hit me when I'm a cloud of mist?
Episode laughed, his body still transformed into mist, when it was no time for him to be laughing. You're mist. Water, in other words, I said. What would happen if I dumped sand on you? Long Jump sent up magnificent sprays of sand when you landed. Even a regular one, but this was a vampire's long jump. Nearly all the sand held by the pit danced up from the sheer impact of the landing. Prior to this, the cross thrown by Episode piercing the pit had whipped sand into the air. My landing there dealt the final blow. Indeed, Episode's body manifested. Just as Hanekawa's blood seeped into the ground, one might say. Not as an intentional act, but as a simple natural phenomenon, Episode showed himself.
What?
Aha! Taking advantage of Episode's bewilderment, I sprang on his frail-looking body. And as the flying sand began to rain down on us, I used my full weight to pin him down. I was sitting on Episode's back, but he still writhed and resisted. I continued to hold him down by force. I held him down and strangled his neck. Episode wouldn't be able to turn his body into mist for a while. Then me, with my superior raw ability, would win. Me. 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 I'd kill him. There was another me, detached and elsewhere, observing me as my mind went blank. Completely blank. That I had become a vampire. That I was facing a half-vampire. The stuff about Kisshot's left leg. All of it disappeared from my mind. Just Hanekawa's organs. They stuck in my blank mind. And that was why. I had to do it to him. This guy, I had to kill.
Okay, enough.
Plop. Right then, a hand landed softly on my shoulder.
Keep going and you won't be a human anymore.
I turned around, my hand still on Episode's neck, to find the man in the Hawaiian shirt, Meimei Oshino. As sand rained down, he just stood in it. For dramaturgy as well. He said he'd been watching from somewhere. He must have been doing so this time, too. I'd completely forgotten. But in that case, You could have stopped Hanekawa!
Don't yell. So spirited, Araragi. Something good happened to you today?
Even at a time like this, Oshino laughed. He wore an obnoxious smile.
Well, I'm sorry to dampen your spirits, but the fight's been decided. Just look, he's passed out.
What? I only noticed after he told me. Episode's eyes had rolled back in his head. I let go of him, startled. But clear impressions of my fingers remained on his throat.
What had I been about to do? Had I been trying to kill the guy? This half-vampire, half-human guy? But Hanekawa. Hanekawa. Hanekawa!
Yeah, I saw.
You saw? Why didn't you stop her?
It's not included in the bill. I've only taken on negotiating with 3 vampire hunters. Anything beyond that requires a separate fee. I can't get mixed up with ordinary people.
2 million. His fee. His compensation. The balance. Then tell me that from the beginning! If you had...
You would have paid another 2 million yen as Missy Class President's fee?
2 million? I would have paid 3!
How stout of you.
You're joking around at a time like this, Oshino? What's your deal?
The one you've just proposed, Araragi. We have a deal. 3 million yen.
Oshino said calmly.
I'll give you a hint then. Try using your head, Araragi. What's that immortal body of yours for?
Huh?
You're right. A lone human inserting herself into a battle between a vampire and a half-vampire is no call for murder. That's going too far. So I'll use my additional fee to teach you something neat. You shouldn't be strangling his neck here. Try to remember.
Remember... what? I didn't have the time to be asking myself. My kiss shot had done earlier. I flattened my fingers and thrust them into my temple. So what if we never see an anime adaptation? I fiddled around inside my brain like mad, sensing every nauseating bit of blood, spinal fluid, and cerebral tissue until I felt sick. And then... Soon enough, I remembered. A vampire characteristic. I made my decision on the spot. With my hands still stuck in my head, I left Oshino an episode behind to run where Hanikawa's body lay. 5 minutes. If no oxygen reached the brain for 5 minutes, it stopped functioning. But that meant if I made it before then, it would do even if her heart had stopped. It would do. Not even 3 minutes had passed. I pulled my fingers out from my temple. And then, I dripped the blood stuck to the hand into Hanikawa's gouged out flank, her oversized wound. Yes, Kishot had told me. Vampire blood has the power to heal. And in this case, it was my blood. That of the thrall of the iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire, Kishot Asoraorian Heart Underblade. Of course, being a vampire, my blood evaporated almost as soon as it left my body, and I had to wound myself over and over to keep bleeding. But as I did so, it happened before my eyes. Hanikawa's wound began to heal. Her organs regenerated, her bones regenerated, her muscles regenerated, her skin regenerated, and finally, she returned back to the way she was, with hardly a scar left. It didn't even look like regen, more like someone had rewound her. I tried touching, gingerly. I stroked Hanikawa's flank. Pale, gently sloping, less fleshy than her age warranted. It was so soft and smooth that I was afraid it might crumble if I pressed too hard. But for all that, it existed, without a doubt. All at once, emotions that I had been stifling began to flow. My heart was brimming with them all of a sudden.
Hanikawa!
I clung to Hanikawa's abdomen with everything I had. Even though I'd end up back where we started if I destroyed her slender body by hugging it with a vampire's strength.
Araragi.
Hanikawa said abruptly, having regained consciousness. No. She seemed to have come to a little sooner.
Araragi, why are you rubbing your cheek against my stomach? And so fondly, too? Also, my uniform is torn. Should I chalk that up to you?
They say people didn't always remember the moments before they lost consciousness. And that seemed to be the case here with Hanikawa. Forget her uniform. Her internal organs had been torn. My bad, Hanikawa. I replied without budging, my face buried in her flank. She was alive, and I just wanted to feel it. Stay still for a bit more. Chapter 012. It was probably due to the difference in volume between her right leg, which had been severed at the knee, and her left leg, which she'd lost whole. The change Kishot underwent after consuming her left leg was a dramatic one. Her going from looking like a 10-year-old to a 12-year-old had been a surprise. Yet despite already knowing that her body would change, I think I was even more surprised this time around. Having recovered her left leg, Kishot suddenly grew to the point where she looked roughly the same age as me.
a 17-year-old. She may have had me beaten height. Of course, between 12 and 17, from puberty to adolescence, is a period when appearances changed the most amongst humans, too. But to give a specific example of her growth, her breast size had become something else. If she puffed her chest out with pride as she'd been doing, it'd be almost frightening now. Her face also looked far more grown up, and accordingly, the design of her dress looked more chic. Her hair had grown even longer and was tied into a ponytail. Such stunning results. True, whatever form she took, Kishad was actually 500 years old. She sounded pleased. Just like when she'd gotten her right leg back, Kishad didn't bother trying to hide her feelings of satisfaction or joy, which made me, who worked as her limbs, happy as well. She made it feel worthwhile.
My body feels quite a bit better. I dare say that my immortality has nearly returned.
Oh, so are you at the point where you might, you know, take care of the next battle?
Unfortunately, I seem as yet unable to use my skills as a vampire. It has become harder for me to die, but that is the extent of it. Perhaps I would be able to fight Dramaturgy, but even Episode might prove too much for my current state.
Kishad said, her tone cautious.
Let alone Guillotine Cutter.
She was saying the same thing. That was my reaction. After that battle, I began by having Hanekawa, now recovered from her wounds, go back home. I thought it would be best to have her do so while Oshino kept an eye on Episode. In addition, Oshino didn't seem to want to meet Hanekawa. Even after the first day, their timing was perfect in terms of not meeting each other. Since Hanekawa wasn't capable of avoiding Oshino, if anyone was doing the avoiding, it had to be him. And she picked up on this and agreed to go home. Saying see you again tomorrow, she went home. After that, Episode, who had woken up, and Oshino and I cleaned up the athletic field we'd utterly trashed. With our bare hands, we filled in the holes where the giant cross had plunged into the ground, returned the sandpit to normal, gathered Hanekawa's scattered chunks of flesh, which of course would never evaporate, wait as we might, and took care of them. It may seem a little lurid, but we buried the collected bits in the flower bed and put up a sign reading Here Lies Tweety. It was Meimei Oshino, the expert, who came up with the idea, but his using twigs to mark the grave with a cross seemed to be going too far, even as a morbid joke. While I wouldn't say we restored things to the way they were, we managed to get it to the point where most people would be fooled. Oshino and Episode then left me to go somewhere on their own.
You got me,
Episode said as he left.
Sheesh. Gotta love it. I must be losing my edge, too. Upset by a total amateur like you. Don't glare at me like that. I apologize about the chick. I got needlessly excited. Plus, I might have been playing it off like it was nothing. But a battle with a thrall of the Aberration Slayer is no cakewalk for me. I couldn't afford to let even a regular human pitch in. Though I look real bad since I lost anyway. But don't think you'll be able to defeat Guillotine Cutter with some stupid little trick. I may be pretty crazy, but his crazy is on a completely different level.
Then, as promised, well, between Hanekawa running in, Episode attacking her for running in, and me trying to kill Episode, our fight got pretty messed up. So I wouldn't say that it was exactly as promised, but he gave back Kishot's left leg. And so, just as he had done the other day, Oshino brought Kishot's left leg home with him, packed inside a Boston bag, in the early hours of April 5th. Kishad immediately took it and ate it. She devoured it like a starved animal, and assumed the form of a 17-year-old. So, Guillotine Cutter, the priestly man with the hedgehoggish hair, the only one who was unarmed. What's his deal? Both you and Episode seem to be super cautious when it comes to him.
I've already explained, have I not?
Your explanations tend to be too vague. There are so many things I'm realizing after the fact. Can't you teach me properly? I'll listen properly for my part. The sun was about to rise on the 5th of April. We didn't have to worry about sunlight as long as we were in the second floor classroom. But I wanted Kishad to tell me before she went to sleep. Actually, I was sleepy too. Meanwhile, Oshino had left the Boston bag behind and set out again. He'd gone for the final negotiation. For someone as sleazy as him, he was a decently hard worker. Well, I was paying him. He needed to earn it. I really had no idea when he was sleeping, though.
So you say. But what practical use would there be in my explaining everything from Alpha to Zeta?
I'm sure there'll be some. Also, if you're going to put it that way, wasn't Omega supposed to be the last letter, rather than Zeta? Be that as it may. Guillotine Cutter. Am I right to think that he's human?
Indeed. He is neither a vampire like Dramaturgy, nor a half-vampire like Episode, but a plain, pure and simple human.
He didn't seem all that plain to me. And pure. I didn't know about that part either. The word just didn't seem to suit him.
True,
Kishot said.
He's what ye'd call a holy man.
Don't tell me he's some kind of Christian spec ops.
So close, yet so far.
Kishot shook her head in reply to my offhand comment. I'd been fine before, what with her coming across as being only 10 or 12 years old. But now that she looked about the same age as me, I did feel somewhat nervous speaking to her. Kishot looked beautiful and doll-like. Like she was a foreign model or something. Or, like she was a medieval noble from a movie, though maybe it was just the dress.
How would I say it in the language of this country? Well, a literal translation should suffice.
A literal translation?
Guillotine Cutter is the archbishop of a new religion, one with little history.
Archbishop? So he was a big shot. An archbishop at his young age? He was human, so he had to be roughly as old as he looked, right?
The religion has no name. I understand little of the organization myself. But one thing is certain. The faith's dogma denies the existence of aberrations.
Huh. A new religion with little history. Of course, Kishot had lived for 500 years. I couldn't rely on her sense of time. For all I knew, she might call a religion formed before World War II a new religion. How many archbishops had come before him? He couldn't be the first, could he?
Within his church, Guillotine Cutter has tasked himself with eradicating aberrations, which supposedly do not exist at all. In other words, in addition to being the archbishop, Guillotine Cutter doubles as their captain of special ops, to use thy term.
Uh-huh.
He is the shadow team leader of the Black Squad, belonging to the Dark Number 4 group of Secret Special Operations.
Yeah, that sounds like a very literal translation. Couldn't she come up with a smoother gloss on it? That was as rough as you could get. But whatever else he may be, he's still a human, right? No matter what methods he uses, won't he still be no match for a vampire?
Consider the situation. Neither a vampire, nor a half-vampire. But a human has taken on vampire hunting as a specialty. If anything, it should be cause for concern. And in fact, has he not taken both my arms from me?
That is true. Dramaturgy, her right leg. Episode, her left leg. Guillotine Cutter, her right and left arms. Twice as many parts as the others, if you looked at it that way.
Still, it was because I erred in not taking them seriously. I felt a tad under the weather, too.
Kishot mouthed a lame excuse. I decided against needling her about it, though.
If work is what drives Dramaturgy to hunt vampires, and Emotions Episode, then 'tis duty that spurs Guillotine Cutter. As odd as it is for me to say this, faith is quite a handful.
Work, emotions, duty. Sure, I could see how a sense of duty might be more of a handful than emotions. So, what should I do?
Do as ye see fit. I leave it in thy hands.
Legendary vampire or not, it felt like she was taking the reigning champion, no gimmick style, too far. But saying no more, Kishot lied down on top of the makeshift bed and went straight to sleep. Not only did she appear to be my age, she was quite beautiful. Kishot exposing her sleeping figure to me so unguardedly put me in an awkward spot. It almost felt like an invitation. Like it'd be rude if I didn't do anything. But like I was being overly self-conscious. An endless spiral of delusion. Whatever. It was about that time, early morning, so I could just go to bed. I understood all too well from my fight with Episode that planning ahead didn't count for much in the end. Having a flimsy plan only plunged me into confusion when it inevitably failed. I had to fight with room to breathe, though that was asking for a lot. Hanekawa was visiting again after sundown, and I needed to talk to her. Until then, I might as well get plenty of sleep so that I'd be in top shape. Even without any sleep, of course, my vampire body, always maintaining its healthiest condition, would be in top shape, but this was more about taking care of myself mentally. It was already April 5th. Before I'd even noticed, spring break was drawing to an end. Was I safely turning back into a human before the new school year? Because loopy talk like going on a journey of self-discovery wouldn't do then. I faded into sleep thinking such thoughts. Vampires may normally sleep in caskets, but like Kishot and Oshino, I slept on a bed made of desks. By the time I woke up, it was already evening. I'd had no dreams. Vampires didn't dream, apparently. Come to think of it, when I did the math, I was sleeping about 12 hours a day. But what could I do? Not much while the sun was out. They say that nothing rears a child better than sleep. Kishot was still sleeping. Not that sleep was rearing her, but waking up beside a blonde beauty was more unsettling to me than sharing a room with a little girl. As for Hanekawa, it seemed like she hadn't arrived yet. Nor had Oshino come back. He knew that Hanekawa would be visiting, so he wouldn't be around for a while if he really meant to avoid meeting her. I wasn't trying to review the material or anything, but while I waited for Hanekawa, I started rereading a superpowered school action manga that Oshino had borrowed and returned after my first time through it. Hanekawa arrived around when I was done with Volume 5. She said she'd gotten lost on the way. This always happened. As Oshino said earlier, it was an effect of the barrier. What an annoying barrier. But on the flip side, it made for an ideal hiding place for Kishada Seroda Oria on Hard Underblade to regain her strength. It must have been covered by the fee. Scratch that. Oshino had just gone ahead with it, for the sake of balance, as he put it.
Good morning, Araragi.
Putting her flashlight to the side, Hanekawa sat in a chair. She was in her school uniform. Both her blouse and her sweater had been ripped apart by Episode the day before. So I was secretly hoping to be treated to my first sight of Tsubasa Hanekawa in street clothes. But it seemed that my hopes had been betrayed. Traitor.
Huh? Wait, what? How? I haven't betrayed you, Araragi.
Sorry, just talking to myself. More like talking nonsense. Well, she'd have a backup uniform, wouldn't she? I'd heard that the girls' uniforms wore out more easily, too. Hanekawa, how's the wound on your stomach?
The wound? Well, there's nothing left of the wound.
Ah. Here, show me.
What here?
I got scolded. I was being pretty serious, though. Then again, we'd made extra sure the night before. And if Hanekawa said she was fine, she probably was. Healing with vampire blood. I'd begun to worry afterwards that it might end up turning Hanekawa into a vampire too, but when I checked with Oshino, an expert, he said there was no risk. It seemed that vampirism and immortality were two different systems. Or rather, they weren't really interrelated. One wasn't the byproduct of the other, they were independent. For a moment there, I thought maybe being a vampire isn't all bad if I can heal injured people. But then, if I hadn't turned into a vampire, you wouldn't have been maimed like that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Laughed Hanekawa. She then looked toward Kishot, dozing the time away atop a line of desks, and said,
Oh, so it's true. Miss Hard Underblade has gotten bigger. Wow, she's become stunningly beautiful. I can still see traces of how she looked before, but she's almost a different person.
You'd agree, speaking as a woman?
Anyone would. Just look at that. Her hair is in a ponytail. I guess she keeps it like that even when she's asleep?
She went.
Hmm.
There seemed to be something on her mind. Well, maybe women were more sensitive when it came to women's appearances. Hanekawa sat there for a while longer, seemingly in thought, before facing me again and reaching inside her bag.
Here you go, Araragi. I bought you a Coke,
she said, holding out a drink that she'd probably bought from a vending machine in the area. I took it. Hey, thanks.
And a Diet Coke for me, if you were wondering.
Huh.
If your body naturally puts on muscle, does that mean you can take as many calories as you want without getting fat? That'd make any girl jealous.
Nah, I wonder. If anything, it's that I don't feel hungry. Like I'd be fine if I didn't eat. Kishot didn't eat much either. It seemed like we ate as a luxury for the taste of it, not because our stomachs were empty.
Don't vampires feed on blood for their meals?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Speaking of, Araragi, do you ever get urges to suck blood or anything?
Hmm? Well, now that you mention it, no. Despite being a vampire. Oshino said Kishot didn't seem to have the ability to suck blood right now. Was it the same for me? I hadn't even thought about it. Can you tell the difference in taste between Coke and Diet Coke, Hanekawa?
Well, yeah.
I can't really.
Huh. Okay, I just thought of something.
Hmm?
A new product is developed by a beverage company. They've managed to create a Diet Cola that tastes the exact same as Coke.
Nice.
But the color is Blue Hawaii.
Then it isn't Coke. I found it mildly funny and laughed. After laughing for a bit, I calmed down. A class president among class presidents. A model student. Excellent grades. With phrases like that overshadowing her, my mental image of Hanekawa was of a prim and proper stickler. A self-important class president. But when I actually spoke to her, she wasn't like that at all. She said interesting things and was always considerate. Despite what she went through the day before, she had yet to blame me in any way. We'd seen each other every day since April began. If she hadn't done that for me, I would most likely have lost heart. My unease that maybe I wouldn't be able to turn back into a human. My unease over having to fight it out with expert vampire hunters. Feelings of uncertainty assailed me when I let my guard down even for a moment. I doubted that Kishot, who basically considered herself the strongest vampire, could understand such feelings. But Hanekawa helped me cope with them. It wasn't just the night before. Hanekawa had rescued me, saved me many times over. I thought I knew, but until the previous day's events, I hadn't realized for real what it meant, vacuously enough. That's why I had to talk to Hanekawa. There was something I had to talk to her about. Hanekawa.
Hmm?
You should stop coming here.
Hmm.
With a cheerful smile still on her face, Hanekawa stood up from her chair and walked over to me.
Well, I thought you might say that.
Please, I don't want you to feel hurt. It's not like last time. Well, last time was partly about not wanting to get you mixed up in it, of course, but a lot of it was my not being able to keep my emotions in check. I took it out on you, and I regret it. But this time is different.
How's it different?
When Episodes Cross took a chunk out of your side yesterday, I lost myself. I could feel the blood rising to my head. I thought I'd die.
You? Not me?
Me. My body was immortal, yet I thought I was going to die. Her wound hurt as if it were my own. I talked to you about my intensity as a human, right? Your getting wounded hurt like it was me who'd gotten wounded. No. It hurt more. Hanekawa, since the night before, I'd been thinking of all the different ways to say it. But in the end, I could only be direct. I'm not so desperate to become human again that I'd do it at your expense.
At my expense?
Hanekawa said, sounding a bit confused.
I don't feel like you're treating me in such a way, Araragi.
But don't you wonder what you're doing? Wasting your spring break for my sake at an important time in your life, and nearly dying in the process. Doesn't that make you wonder what you're doing?
Not at all?
Hanekawa shook her head from side to side as if being asked such a thing was the bigger quandary.
I've forgotten what happened then, but it was my own fault that I nearly died, right? If anything, you are the one who saved me.
I'm not able to see it that way. I knew that Hanekawa was being honest when she said what she said. I knew that she wasn't just trying to consider my feelings. She wasn't being insincere.
She was sincerely a good person. But she was that strong, and therefore precarious. I just don't get it. I'm not confident that I'd be able to help you in the same situation. I'm not confident that, if our positions were reversed, I would be able to go that far. I'm not confident that I'd be able to show myself to a loose cannon like him if I had a body that could die. But you did it like it was nothing. I tried to choose my words, but to no avail. I had no choice. There was only one word that could express the way Hanekawa was. You scare me.
I'm scary?
Honestly, you creep me out, I said, my eyes downcast. Please, I'm not saying that to hurt you. I just can't understand why you're going this far for me. I can't figure out how you'd be this devoted to a classmate you only got to know the other day. It's like you're a saint or something. A saint, or perhaps the Madonna. But your self-sacrifice is way too heavy a burden for me. I'm not big enough to bear it. Healing or not isn't the issue. When I think of you being wounded for my sake, I just freeze. It scares me so much that I can't face Guillotine Cutter like this.
It's not self-sacrifice.
That was Hanekawa's reply, and she sounded a little angry.
It isn't self-sacrifice.
Then what is it?
Self-satisfaction,
she said quietly.
You're misunderstanding me, Araragi. I'm not that good of a person, and I'm not that strong of a person. I'm just doing whatever I feel like doing. I doubt there are many people out there as self-absorbed as I am. If you came to know the real me, Araragi, I bet you'd feel disillusioned.
Stop putting a girl on a pedestal, she laughed.
I'm sneaky, and I think I'm tough. Enough to creep you out, actually.
How?
How? In every way, I guess. Even with you, Araragi, I'm only doing this because I feel like it. There's absolutely no reason for you to feel bad.
Hanekawa.
But...
Hanekawa said, clapping her hands in front of her chest and continuing with her hands still together.
If my presence is making things harder for you, then that really is putting the cart before the horse. You already have a pretty nice collection of super-powered school action manga, so maybe I'm done being your shopper. Reading more might cause everything to overflow. It does look like there's nothing left for me to do.
No, there is something you can do. I was staring at Hanekawa. With my eyes still fixed on her, I said, wait for me. At that school, once the new year starts, wait for me. I realized I was asking for a lot. It wasn't like I had no idea how much pain and anxiety accompanied waiting for someone who might never show up. Even if I fought the most dangerous vampire hunter of the three, this man whom everyone was cautious of, and beat the next stage, it wasn't a given that I could turn back into a human. And I wanted her to wait for me. I'm looking forward with all my heart to chatting with you again.
Whoops!
Hanekawa took a step back at that moment for some reason. There was a playful look in her eyes.
Beep beep beep. Beep beep beep. Beep beep beep.
Huh? What's that the sound of?
My heart throbbing.
What? Girls come up with a sound effect for that? A sound like any old alarm clock, too.
Whew. I nearly developed something for you just now.
What do we mean by developed here? Like a new drug or a beach resort? I was rich then, a tycoon.
So that's the line you use to sweet-talk girls.
Huh? No, no, no. I don't even know what you mean. I barely even talk to girls.
Listen to you, acting all tough and uninterested. Like you never bought those dirty magazines.
But I'm a guy. What's a guy to do?
Sheesh,
she said. Then, after giving her body an exaggerated stretch and putting on a determined look, she thrust both of her hands underneath the hem of her school uniform's pleated skirt. I thought she was going to pull up her skirt again, but no. Hanekawa wouldn't do something so illogical. Instead, she took off her panties. She lowered her peach-colored, lace-rimmed panties and carefully stepped out of them, the elastic parts staying clear of her soles. I think it goes without saying that I was dumbfounded. Prime grade illogic. Okay.
It had been enough to make even Hanekawa blush. She shyly held out her bald panties.
Like just before the climactic fight in a super-powered school action series, if I may.
Hanekawa said, still looking bashful.
I'll let you borrow these. Give them back to me when we meet next school year.
Hold on, hold on! Yes, there was a scene like that in the first manga you bought for me, but the item was the heroine's necklace.
I don't wear a necklace.
Hanekawa said, awkwardly holding down her skirt.
Araragi, you like panties, don't you?
I won't deny that. I'm not denying it, you know? Denying it would call into question Koyomi Araragi's very identity, so I'm not denying it, okay? A Koyomi Araragi who can't say no. But still...
Well, if you don't want them...
No, I did not say that. Wanting it or not isn't the issue here, is it? Yep. What was that? So I give these back to you when we meet next school year?
Quite at a loss, and somewhat surprised at how compact panties were once removed, I accepted them. A soft warmth spread within my hands. Sorry, I can't give these back.
Excuse me?
I mean, I'm never giving these back. I'm passing these down from generation to generation as the Araragi family heirloom.
I certainly didn't sign up for that!
These panties have been parted from your flesh for eternity.
How dare you!
I won't give them back, but mark my words, I said, trying my best to strike a brave pose. I will return this favor. If there's ever a time you need me, and even if there's nothing I can do, I promise I'll be there. As of today, it will be my life's mission to repay you.
Just give those back.
My very best effort to sound cool, and it didn't work. Words. So powerless. Hanekawa spoke next.
So, now I'm going to have to go home pantyless, in a skirt, with its low security rating. Compared to that, beating this guillotine cutter person can't be that hard, right?
Point taken. No matter how grueling the battle, I would overcome if I kept that in mind. I'd win handily.
Then good luck.
Good luck to you too. Until next school year. The two of us smiled as we bumped fists. I looked forward to it, meeting Hanekawa in the new school year, once spring break was over. Hoping I'd be in the same class as her, I looked forward to it. Renewing my determination to become human again. But about 3 hours after she went home, when the memories of our parting was still fresh in my mind and Kisshot had finally woken up, Oshino returned to the abandoned cram school, looking uncharacteristically distraught.
Sorry, I messed up.
He said in an equally dire voice.
Missy class president got kidnapped.